Okay, good morning again. Before I start, actually, I want to make a very nice observation. I'm looking at the audience from here, and we seem to have more females than males in the room. That's not very usual, actually, to be honest. You know, I usually speak at a lot of conferences. I haven't seen it in that clear, you know, in terms of participation of females. So that's really great. Going back to my topic, you know, I want to first of all start by sharing with you my sincere thanks for the opportunity to be here. This is an extremely exciting times for us. It's an extremely exciting time for technology in general. I think technology is changing everybody's life. It's becoming part of our day-to-day life like never before. And I'm also very excited that Google is really at the center of this in a very big way. And we're also excited that technology is becoming a very integral part in the way we educate ourselves, in the way we entertain ourselves, in the way we reach to people and stay connected to our loved ones and family and so on. And I think Google is also trying to play a big role in shaping this industry as we go forward. To be able to do this, you know, our CEO always challenges us to think very big. And you know, we used to say think big at Google all the time, but I think very recently he managed to find the phrase that really defines what thinking big at Google is. Okay? And the way he mentioned it, he said, don't think about improving something by 10%, think of improving it by 10 times. And once you think 10x, then you have to go back to the drawing board and you have to think differently. And you have to have the courage to actually go ahead and try to make it work. And this is what differentiates Google, because if you're the only person trying to solve a problem, then it's gonna be a very easy ride for you because no one has the courage to do it, okay? And I think today we'll try to share with you a little bit more about the culture of innovation at Google. And also about how are we working very closely with many stakeholders, with users, companies, small businesses, entrepreneurs, governments, to help them make the best out of the web in general. Okay, this is what we feel is our mission. We sort of have two missions. One mission is to organize the world information, which is a 10x project by itself, I think maybe more than 10x. And on the other side, the second mission is to work with everyone in the countries that we're operating in to help them make the best out of the web. Okay, so joining me here today is my colleague, Peter Barron. He's the director of communications in the UK, and he oversees the EMEA region, which is Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And he works very closely with a lot of stakeholders to tell the stories about innovation and how Google tackles innovation. He has a talk today that will address this and will also address how do we work with entrepreneurs in general and what is the culture of Google that we would like to spread to enable innovation in the ecosystem. So without any further ado, please, Peter.
Thank you, Mohammed. Thank you. I'm going to stand to present for a little bit. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. And it's nice to see so many women. It's nice to see a queue at the door. That's always encouraging, isn't it? So it's lovely to be here. This is actually my first time in Dubai. And the organizer of this session, when I arrived, said, can I just check, are you Sir Peter Barron? And I said, no, I'm not Sir Peter Barron. I'm just plain Mr. Peter Barron. He says, when you do a Google search, you find a Sir Peter Barron. And it's not a very common name, Peter Barron, but there are two Peter Barrons who show up in Google search, me and an editor of a newspaper in the north of England who was recently honored by the Queen, hence the mistake. And I've bumped into him a few times in my career because I used to work at the BBC and I used to edit a program called Newsnight. And one time I got a letter from a viewer who said, I'm very impressed with your work. I just want to thank you for the great work that you do. And I read it with great pride. And then she went on to say, I'm amazed that you can edit a newspaper and edit a television program at the same time. So that's the other Sir Peter Barron. So I was going to talk to you a little bit today about how we think about technology and innovation at Google, and really talk about the kinds of things that we're encouraged to think about right across the company, obviously from the engineers who are designing Google's products, but it's something that's actually instilled in everybody at the company, how to think about innovating and constantly driving things forward, as Mohammed says. So in the first place, let's go way back to ancient history. This is what Google looked like in 1998 when we were founded. And actually, if you search for the words Google in 1998 into Google, that's the page that you get taken to. That's something we did for our 15th birthday. And there's some amazing little facts on that page. The first one that strikes me is just 234,000 references to Google back in 1998, and that's changed in an extraordinary way in the period in between. But what we were really trying to do at that point was direct you to 10 blue links. So we were searching our index of websites and really taking you to websites based on the keywords you would put in the hope that you would find that information. Now, if we fast forward to the future, take me back to the present. This is what our results page for Burj Khalifa looks like today. And you see that it's a very different picture. We're no longer just taking you to 10 blue links. We're really trying to take you directly to the answer that you're looking for when you make that search. So you'll see an image of Burj Khalifa, a map for how to get there. You'll see reviews with 4.7 on a scale of 5 in terms of reviews, what other people searched for, and news items about that, perhaps videos, perhaps images. So we're really trying to take you directly to the answer that you're looking for. But I think the other big thing that is extremely relevant, particularly to this region, is that that is desktop search. That is something that has actually become overtaken by developments itself. And I remember, I've been at Google about 5 years, and I remember when I first arrived at Google, we had a number of principles that we talked about all the time. And one of those principles was, be really good at one thing. And the one thing that we were really good at was desktop search. And it would have been a completely understandable thing for us to do in those days, to say, well, that's what we're good at, so let's just stick with that and get ever better at it and carry on regardless. And of course, if we'd done that back 5 years ago, we would now be a complete irrelevance, because the world has moved on from desktop search very, very quickly towards mobile search and mobile connectivity. And so these are two pictures taken in St. Peter's Square, one 2005, one 2013. It's not a completely fair comparison, because one is the death of an outgoing pope, and the other is the incoming pope in 2013. But I think the point is extremely clear, that the world's population has moved extraordinarily fast towards accessing media via mobile devices. And the pace of change really has been terrifying, and has been a huge challenge for many companies, and it's very, very interesting, very many companies, and it's been very interesting to hear the presentations yesterday talking about the plans for the Emirates government to move all its government services towards mobile over the next couple of years. And actually, back in 2010, Eric Schmidt spoke at the Mobile World Congress and talked about Google becoming a mobile-first company. And by mobile-first, he means that when we design all our products, we design them with mobile consumption in mind. And that's a tough task, because most of our engineering is still done on a desktop rather than on a mobile device. So we're moving towards mobile, and we're also trying to move towards what Larry Page describes as the perfect search engine. So the perfect search engine would understand exactly what you mean and give you exactly what you want. And I think we've made a lot of progress with Google Search over the years, but we're still not precisely there yet. It's a very, very ambitious aim, and something that we continue to work on. So now I'm going, my camera has come over here, and I'm going to attempt to do a little interactive demonstration of what we're trying to do to develop Search. Okay, let me take a sip of water. Good. So I'm going to do a few examples of mobile voice search. What is the world's tallest building? Burj Khalifa. How tall is it?
Burj Khalifa is 828 meters tall.
Who built it?
Burj Khalifa was designed by Adrian Smith, William F. Baker, and other architects.
And how do I get there?
Burj Khalifa is 15 minutes from your location by car and light traffic. Here are your directions.
So you see what we've tried to do there. We've tried to actually create a conversation with the search engine rather than simply asking each question from scratch. So you could imagine a situation where you would say, what's the tallest building in the world? How tall is the Burj Khalifa and how do I get to the Burj Khalifa? But I didn't do that. I was actually having a conversation which was really mimicking a human conversation with my telephone. So the machine, oh, can we keep the camera on please? So the machine is learning how to deal with the questions, working out, oh, he's gone away. Oh, sorry, can you come back? I haven't finished yet. Oh, yeah, we're carrying on. Yeah. Oh, there's a long way to go. Sorry about that. So we'll do a few more demonstrations. But yeah, so what we're trying to do is work out, as Larry Page says, exactly what you mean by asking those questions and then give you the answer. So once you've got your answers about Burj Khalifa, and the camera is running again, brilliant, well done, thank you, we can then, for example, take directions to get there. And I can do turn by turn directions. I've never been to the Burj Khalifa, but I'm going tonight, so this is actually quite useful. There we go. And now I get to at the top. So that is voice search. And really, in terms of the kind of utility that it has, we're trying to bring you knowledge, really. I mean, our head of search these days talks about knowledge. And here's a good example of how we can take you straight to some very, very rich content and knowledge. So imagine you are an art student sitting at home doing your homework, and your assignment is to do with Impressionist painters.
Impressionist painters.
Here are artists frequently mentioned on the web.
Now, what's happening there is that it's taking my instruction, Impressionist painters, scanning the web for mentions of that term, seeing the content within those pages, the painters who are mentioned, and then bringing that to me in an attractive package of display. And that's happening within a fraction of a minute. So I can flick through, for example, there and see a whole range of Impressionist painters. So let me have a look at Claude Monet. I'm interested in Claude Monet. And again, it does the same thing for Monet. It's scanning where is mention of Claude Monet, and there are images of his paintings. And again, I can flick through there. Incredibly useful in education. But you'll notice that what I'm doing there is that I'm still asking the search engines questions. I know what I want to find out, and I'm putting that to the search engine. And what we've been thinking about at Google is how do we actually go a step beyond that? So I wanted to show you something called Google Now. And I was trying this for the first time in Dubai. As I said, it's my first time in Dubai, so I didn't know how well it worked. But Google Now works fantastically well when you travel to a different place, because your phone obviously knows where your location is. It knows what you're interested in, what you've been searching for, events you have, for example, in your diary. So what we can do is, without even asking for it, with search without search, we can serve up a whole selection of interesting facts that we think are going to be useful to you today. So this is my set of cards for today in Dubai. Helpfully, it's telling me that I've got a Google Innovation Workshop at 11:30, so here I am, that's good. I'm interested in Tottenham Football Club, for better or for worse, and that is something that it gives me information about every day. And then it's worked out that here I am in Dubai, so it's giving me nearby attractions that I might be interested in visiting. It knows that I've shown an interest in the Winter Olympics, which are going on at the moment, so there's information about that. Things I might be interested in taking a photograph of, and then because it knows I'm in Dubai, it's giving me the temperature, so it's a lovely day, there's the exchange rate, and it thinks I might want to use Google Translate to make myself understood in Arabic. Now, this is a risky business because I don't understand Arabic, so you have to bear with me here, and you can give me a signal if I'm doing well or not. But let's go into Google Translate and see how we get on.
Good morning. My name is Peter Barron.
صباح الخير اسمي بيتر بارون.
So far, so good.
Which way to Burj Khalifa?
الطريق التي لبرج خليفة.
Nearly. I think I spotted the problem there. Okay.
Where can I buy some gold jewelry?
أين يمكنني شراء بعض الذهب والمجوهرات؟
Two out of three ain't bad. Thank you. So that has got that's my plans for present for my wife nicely sorted out. And if I'm talking to a shopkeeper, for example, and even with that translation, perhaps I can't make myself understood, I can then blow that up full frame and show the phone to the shopkeeper and say, that's what I want on that. And hopefully that says, where can I buy some gold jewelry? Nothing dangerous. Okay. So let me then take you on to another application that we have, which is called Field Trip. And this is something that grew out of our maps project. Let me just see if I can find it. So this is Field Trip. And again, what it is doing is it's search without search. So it knows the location, where my location is. And if I'm walking down the street in Dubai or anywhere else, it can send me information about things that it thinks I might be interested in. And I can choose from a whole panel of information about the kinds of things I'm interested in. So I can say, look, I'm interested in architecture. I'm not interested in restaurants. I'm interested in lifestyle experiences, all kinds of things like that. So you can tailor what it is that you're interested in doing. And then as you walk along the street, it will point you to things that it thinks you might be interested in. And the best illustration I had of this recently was I was walking on my way home from work, and I walked past a statue, and I stopped to look at the statue. And just as I was looking at it, my phone buzzed in my pocket, and I took out my phone, and there was a panel that told me about that statue. So you can imagine how extremely useful that could be for government services, for tourism here in Dubai. So let me have a little look at what I might be interested in. So the Wild Wadi Water Park catches my eye. So there we are, that's the card for the water park, and it gives me all the information about that, all the different attractions and so on, information about when it's open and so on. And then I can take that and share it with my family. For example, I can say, here I am in Dubai, you might be interested in coming at some point to Dubai and visiting the water park. So that's Field Trip. And I hope you can see that the applications of all of those things, whether it's Google Now or field trip could have extraordinary possibilities for services and tourism, etc. here. Good, okay. I'm finished with the presentation. We'll head back to the slides. Thank you. Okay, so back to some of the things that we think about when we think about innovation. I'll stand up again. We measure everything at Google. There's an obsession with measuring things. And we also talk quite a lot about ignoring the hippo in the room. And when we talk about the hippo in the room, HIPPO stands for the highest paid person's opinion. And normally in a business or indeed in a government, the person who decides on these things is the highest paid person in the room. People turn to him or her and say, what do you think? And there's a very interesting example of this with the ads that are shown on Gmail. So about 5 years ago, we launched ads on Gmail, and someone discovered that the shade of blue on the Gmail ads was slightly different from the shade of blue on the ads that appear on Google Search. So the question was, what is the right color of blue? What should we go for? So rather than the highest paid person in the room deciding what color we should go for, we decided to do some tests. And we didn't just do two tests, we actually did 40 tests. So we tested 40 different shades of blue to see which one was the most likely to be clicked on. And we discovered that a slightly purple shade of blue was attractive to users. They were more likely to click on it and therefore go through to more ads. Now, you might think that's a very trivial example, but actually, because of the scale of our business internationally, it made quite significant impact on the revenues. More people were clicking through on the ads because of the shade of blue that we were using. So at Google, we want to measure everything, opinion, much less important than data. Making big bets, this is something that is absolutely ingrained in the way that we think about everything we do. And actually, Larry Page's entire career has been built on trying to see 10, 15 years into the future and place really significant bets as to where the company is going to go. And Gmail is a very, very good example of that. And actually, Gmail was launched in 2004. It was launched on April the 1st, 2004, as many of you remember it. And lots of people genuinely thought that it was an April Fool's joke, because we made almost unlimited storage available in Gmail at that time. And I think you probably remember going back a few years when you used to have to clear out your inbox of emails every now and again because you'd reached your limit of storage. At that point, it was a really revolutionary step to offer almost unlimited storage, and the amount of storage that we're offering has continued to go up and up and up, and actually, there's very, very few people who ever reached the end of that limit. And the big bet there was that the cost of storage was going to fall really dramatically in a short period of time, and of course, it has proved to be. And now we have Gmail used by hundreds of millions of users all across the world. So some other examples of big bets would be two very, very relevant for this region, YouTube and Android. And many, many commentators questioned why we had invested in YouTube and Android back in 2005 and 2006, when those looked like businesses that were kind of strange things to get into. But history has been proven that the extraordinary take-up of video on YouTube and the extraordinary move to mobile, two extremely important bets, which have really been central to the success of Google in recent years. The prototyping instinct, this is something that is really, really central to the way we think about Google. A phrase that we use all the time is launch and iterate. So get something out there, create something, get it out there, and then get feedback from your users and make it better. It doesn't have to be perfect at the beginning. Launch and iterate. And I think coming from a very different background, I came from a background at the BBC, and I think that's probably the attitude that I find most strikingly in contrast from other businesses. I think there's a tendency in a lot of businesses to say, let's perfect it, let's write the business plan, and then launch it in a year's time when everything is spot on. And the danger these days is that if you do that, by the time you get around to launching your product, it has been overtaken by technology and events. And this is obviously a difficult area because software is something that's very easy to launch and iterate. Gmail actually started in beta and remained in beta version until about 2009. We put it out there and we constantly made it better. And with software, it's easy to do that. With hardware, it's much more difficult. It's hard to launch and iterate a truck, as some people say. The truck has got to be good by the time you launch it. But this is an example of the prototyping instinct we did with Google Glass. You see there on the left-hand side of the screen, at the beginning of that project, we literally had a set of goggles and a laptop in a rucksack on the gentleman's back there. So we mocked up how a wearable piece of technology might work using a laptop. And then it went to the next iteration, which, as you can see there in the second photograph, is a rather strange mobile phone strapped to the side of the head, and then using the eyepiece. And again, that is then iterated until we have what we now recognize as Google Glass. So what we've done with Google Glass is that it's still actually in prototype. We haven't launched it as a commercial product yet, or launched it to the public. What we've done is we've given it to people that we're calling explorers, and they are exploring the possibilities of glass, working out the kind of etiquette of wearing such a device in public. We're working with developers to develop apps that can be useful for glass, and that will then be launched as a real product in due course. So the prototyping instinct, very, very strong at Google. And then Mohammed talked a little bit about this. This is 10x innovation. So this comes from, or a lot of the thinking here comes from Google X, and the X in Google X stands for 10, and we're trying to develop 10 times innovation. So a lot of the things that I've shown you thus far are to do with making things incrementally better, so making search or making Gmail or making Google Glass incrementally better over time, and that's, of course, very, very important and is a core to everything we do. But it's also the case that the really big breakthroughs, the really big revolutions in technology take giant leaps forward. So while most of our business concentrates on the day-to-day and the improvement of our products, we're constantly thinking about how we can deliver 10 times improvement. So if we can identify a big problem, identify a radical solution, and identify a realistic technology, something that we really can develop, and find the sweet spot in the middle of those three things, then there are projects where we can really invest in 10x thinking and 10x innovation. And probably the most famous example of this is the driverless car. And obviously a lot has been written and said about the driverless cars, but the most important point about it, I think, is the thinking that went into the reasoning behind the project. So the huge problem that was pointed out at the beginning was, well, look, there's an awful lot of congestion on the roads, particularly in California where we're based, a huge amount of congestion on the roads there. How do we tackle that problem? A huge amount of road accidents around the world, huge problem, something that would be great to solve, and the problem of emissions, climate change. How do we tackle pollution? And the task that was set to the engineers was, how could we address all three of those problems? Could we find a way to half the number of emissions that road traffic causes, that halves the number of accidents on the road, and that halves the amount of congestion on the road? A huge task, I think a task that everybody would agree it would be great if we could make significant progress on that. And perhaps counterintuitively, the answer that came back was, to do those three things, the answer could be driverless cars. And the reason for that is that you, by having computers and computing directing the cars, you can make the whole system much, much more efficient. You can drive cars more closely together. You can put more people in the cars, etc., and tackle some of those big problems. So that's driverless cars, obviously still some way off seeing that in reality, but that is a very, very good example of 10x thinking. Okay, just before we're going to do some questions and answers in a little bit, but just before we do that, I was just going to race through some of the things that we are thinking about for the next 5-10 years. And at Google, we're always very reluctant to talk about what's coming next. It's a dangerous business. But just some broad brushstrokes of the kinds of things that that we should expect. So that's Gordon Moore, the coiner of Moore, so-called Moore's Law. And Moore's Law actually isn't a law at all. It's an observation, and the observation is that the number of transistors on a chip is likely to double round about every 2 years. And that law has held good since the 1960s, and I think it's due to continue to round about the year 2020. And of course, that means that computing is becoming ever cheaper and ever smaller, and that leads to some very obvious conclusions. Ubiquitous internet, I think, is certainly something that we are very, very invested in. And I think it's interesting that at the moment we have around about 2.5 billion people online across the planet, and that's been a huge revolution and a huge change in the way that we lead our lives. But it's still worth pointing out that there's around 5 billion people on the planet who still don't have access to the internet. And if we could do something about that, then the opportunities really are huge. So we're working on a range of different projects, some of them involving fiber, installing fiber in Kansas City and other cities across America. We're working with organizations like Starbucks to provide ubiquitous internet in their coffee shops. And this is Project Loon, perhaps the most ambitious of all. And again, this is another piece of 10x thinking. And the idea behind Project Loon is to put balloons into near space, high in the stratosphere, floating a network of balloons floating around the Earth in near space, carried by the winds that surround the planet, bringing internet connectivity to remote areas, or areas, for example, where the internet has been knocked out by a disaster or something like that. Now, this is again an ambitious project, but something that we are testing at the moment in New Zealand and showing really, really interesting results. So we're working very hard to get the next 5 billion online. Wearable devices, obviously a beneficiary of Moore's Law. The devices are getting smaller, the computers within them are getting more and more powerful. We're already seeing devices like glass, we're seeing wristbands, particularly in health and fitness. And I was watching with great interest the museum exhibit here yesterday, where wearable devices are really starting to become a reality, or a something that's not in the very distant future. In the film that we saw yesterday, looking at the vision for the next few years, passport control, opening your car with your wearable device, all of that is very near at hand. And then finally, the idea that everything or many things will be connected in the not too distant future. So at the moment, around about 8 billion devices around the world are connected to the internet. And that's expected to rise to around about 80 billion in the next few years. And we can see examples of that with organizations like Nest, which is a company that we acquired within the last few weeks. And they are producing smoke alarms and thermostats connected to the internet. And you can immediately see the application of that. And again, we saw it in the film, the Vision of the Future, yesterday, where you could be heading on your way home and say, I want the heating to come on by the time I arrive home. If I was in London, if I was in Dubai, I might want the air conditioning to come on before I get home. And you can send a message through to your thermostat so that the temperature in your home is at a good standard by the time you get home. So the Internet of Everything coming very soon. And I think the final point I would make is really that digital businesses win. And I think this is certainly an observation that is I don't have to preach to the converted of the Emirates government. When I hear the presentations that were made yesterday, it's very, very clear that this government sees that the digital approach is the way forward. And we've demonstrated that businesses who embrace digital are growing perhaps 5, 6, 7 times more quickly than businesses who aren't online. And I know that the number of businesses, and perhaps Mohammed will talk about this in a bit, but the number of small businesses in this region not yet online is a concern and a challenge. And in terms of export, for example, we're seeing double the amount of export being handled by companies who are online. Obviously, the opportunities of a global audience of billions are really huge. So I'll leave it there. And now we're open to questions. Thank you very much indeed. Right.
I can start with one question.
Splendid.
You know, one of the things that we always talk about in Google, in terms of the culture of innovation, is that we celebrate failure.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is a very uncommon, issue in the region here, specifically in the Middle East, where we actually find failure sort of a shame.
Yeah.
We hide failure. We're afraid of failure, and sometimes even the laws of bankruptcy, for example, they also penalize failure. Mm-hmm. So, can you tell us more about how do we think about failure in Google?
Yeah. No, it's a really, really interesting question, and it is counterintuitive because we pay a huge amount of attention at Google to excellence in execution and producing products that are really superb, but failure is very closely built into that process. And what we would say is that if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough, or you're not being ambitious enough. So particularly, I think, when thinking about the 10x thinking, we're very, very keen to celebrate failure, to try really ambitious things, and see how far we can push it. So failure really important. The other thing that we talk often about is failing fast. So it's fine to identify something that isn't working. So at Google over the years, we have developed many, many different products. Some have gone on to be huge global successes, and some have been embarrassing failures. And the way we look at that is it's fine to have a failure as long as you put it out of its misery quickly. And sometimes that's controversial. We switch off products and say, actually, we're going to close that because it hasn't taken on a significance at scale. But nothing wrong with that as long as you learn from your mistakes and apply them to future projects.
Good. There was a question on this side. Please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Rashid Talahi. First of all, thank you for the interesting presentation. I believe every one of us in this room is a witness on the success of Google. I'm one of the, I won't say one, I believe everyone here is a great follower of Google, and ever since Mr. Larry Page and Mr. Sergey Brin started with the search engine that mm-hmm. was ridiculed by what was called as not compared to the mess of Yahoo, although it was simple, the algorithm was easy to use. But now it grew and it became, it has its own browser, it has an armed guard headquarters, and I have a question actually. What's next? I started believing that at some time Google will allow me to speak to my pet. Google will allow me to basically diagnose myself in case I'm in a rural area where no one can basically reach out to me. I've been fascinated with how innovative Google has become, and I started expecting anything from Google. I won't say especially after Google Glass. I believe this is something simple, although people look at it as something sophisticated. What is next? I may be like many of the audience in this room. We expected that Mr. Peter Brown would revealed something, something new. We've always, actually, we're classically conditioned. We're not surprised anymore. Yeah. Google has been being surprises were there, but now surprises aren't there. I think Google has been forcing small businesses to adopt to its algorithms. So nothing is impossible so far. So what's next, Mr.
Yeah.
Peter?
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, as I suggested in my presentation, I can't tell you precisely in terms of what product we will develop yet next. But what we can do is give you a sense of the thing, of the way things are going, whether that is through ubiquitous internet or more wearable devices, the internet of things, et cetera. So you can look at the direction that our company is going in towards more machine learning, more the internet of connected things. But I think, I mean, you mentioned that we do a lot of things. We started being very good at one thing, which was desktop search, and we have developed to doing a broad range of things. But I think if you look at the climate in terms of technology innovation and competition, it is really extraordinary how fierce that competition is, and the pace of it is really, really frightening and extraordinary. And that's really the way we approach everything we do. We're trying to think, where is the world going to be in 5 or 10 years' time, and how do we give our users what they are going to want and demand in 5 years' time? And I was very struck, for example, watching in the museum exhibit here, the smart mirror. And that's obviously not something that is in every home currently, but you can see that it's not very far away. And showing you what I was showing you there with Google Now, very similar actually in terms of its utility to the smart mirror. It's really saying, these are the things we know you're interested in, the things you're planning to do today, and here is information and advice that is helpful to that. So the way we're moving is really, we're evolving search away from an active piece of asking a question to much more assistance and suggestion of information that may be useful to you.
Peter, while we understand that you can't tell us more than, you know, there's a lot of things in the labs out there which we can't talk about, but would you want to shed some light on how EMEA kind of features and things which have been launched? Like you launched Fiverr, you launched Loon, you've launched Glass, you know, when do we see these things in this region?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting point about, obviously we're a Californian company, and the most of the engineering and the expertise that goes into creating Google's products is based in California. We have something like 17,000 engineers there. But we also have engineers around the world working on lots of really interesting projects. I'm based in London, for example, and we have a lot of engineers who come from a background of expertise in voice search. So quite a lot of the things that I was showing you there were developed from engineers in EMEA. In the last couple of weeks, we acquired a company called DeepMind, a guy called Demis Hassabis, who's an absolute genius in the field of AI, who will be bringing his expertise to Google search. So there's lots of development going on in countries around the world which contribute to the overall picture. In terms of devices and services coming to the MENA region, well, you know, we're rolling things out all the time. Street View, for example, you know, obviously we've delivered Street View in many countries around the world, and you'll have seen the Street View car here, and we have been driving and collecting the imagery in Dubai in recent months, so that's coming soon. So most of the projects, you know, our plan to come to this region in due course. And actually, I was very pleasantly surprised when I came to Dubai yesterday. Doing things like Google Now and Field Trip, the content there is already very, very rich. Sir?
Oh. Then we move to this.
Okay.
One more
here, yeah.
Peter, thank you very much for informative presentations, first of all. Honestly speaking, Google made our lives more easy and helping a lot. My question is about employee satisfaction, about how we increase the employee engagement, productivities, and how we create environments that really encourage, energize, passionate of what they're doing, especially when we are talking about the top 20 people, top 20% of the people who is considered as a talented potential in your organization.
Yes, so you're talking about the satisfaction of the employees who work at Google.
I'm pretty sure that the turnover is very low at Google, but how helping creating better environment for your employees?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, and the amount of effort that is taken at Google to creating a good situation and good benefits for employees is quite extraordinary. So in the first place, there's a huge amount of attention paid to hiring the right people. And it's a very, very painstaking process. If you go for a job at Google, you might be interviewed by five or six different people, and any from different parts of the business. And any one of those people can have a veto on hiring a person. So they would say, well, look, you all think he's brilliant, but it doesn't work for me. I don't think he's the right person. And that would then put the process back to square one, and the whole thing starts again. So it's a very, very painstaking process to find the right people. And then when we find them, we work extremely hard to create conditions which are beneficial to that employee. And we do something called a Google Geist survey every year, where we ask really quite detailed questions about their satisfaction in the job, whether they intend to leave the company in the next year or 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. And then we take action. And again, going back to data and measurement, we measure very, very precisely the scores in terms of employee satisfaction, and then aim to take action to improve situations. We also famously have things like free food. We offer massages to our staff to keep them fit while they're working, and a lot of other benefits, things like encouraging cycling and fitness and so on. So a huge amount of attention is paid to making sure that the staff are both happy and fulfilled. Oh, I couldn't tell you exactly, but I know it's very high. I mean, in terms of that survey, actually, the survey is just being done at the moment, and a couple of things are very interesting. The number of people who fill in the survey is exceptionally high, so it'll be in the high 90s in terms of people giving the information, and for each manager there will be different scores, but generally speaking, the satisfaction levels are remarkably high. Yeah. Questions for over here.
Female question. Fair share.
Hi. Thank you for your presentation. We associate Google with being innovative and young. Kind of felt old today. I think we've been spoiled by cutting-edge technologies. What Google acquired, just a presentation in the other hall before your presentation, from robotics. And I think today, I felt like this came across as Google is getting old. So does Google have a strategy or priorities to maintain young and innovative and cutting edge?
It's a really, really good point. And you know, Google is, well, it's 15 years old, and it is now quite a big company. And we have a global presence of around about 30,000 people. So it is clearly, it's a big challenge to make sure that you still behave like a startup. And keep the spirit that you had when you first started. And I think if you look at a whole range of things that we're involved in, whether it's Google Glass or driverless cars or Project Loon or simply Google Now, the innovative spirit and the intention to remain like a startup. I mean, I showed you Field Trip there. Field Trip is a kind of spun off startup within Google. So it's an extremely important point. And something that we're very, very alive to all the time.
Hi, Peter. My name is Daniel. I have a question about metrics, because you were talking about something where you did 40 studies about which of the users that you had have clicked on the highest received by one of the colors, basically. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask you about metrics in Google, how you measure metrics, because I come from a digital perspective. I work with some brands on mainly social media, digital media applications and such. Basically, a lot of people tend to go for, oh, yeah, we got more users, we got more likes, we got more whatever it was. But sometimes I've read a lot about these become vanity metrics instead of actual metrics that people should measure. So I want to ask, how would you advise businesses and sectors over here to measure which metrics shall they use? Because there's a lot of money spent on marketing and advertising, but at the same time, you know, it might not be the right thing because it might not provide any value for users.
I
have another small question after that. How does Google, how is privacy right now? What is the importance of privacy at Google when with all these new technologies such as, you know, driverless cars and stuff like that? There's a lot of probably governmental sectors around the world want a lot of information and to take control of that, to understand where people go, do, you know, all of these things. So how's Google aiming to protect privacy of other people?
Sure, sure. Well, actually, maybe I should refer to Mohammed in terms of metrics, because he's a great metrics man and with a consultancy background. I mean, but I this is an extremely good point. And you know, in my area of press and communications, meaningful measurement, I think, is really hard. I think my two points about first of all, we should measure everything. We should attempt to measure things. I think we should say that although measurement may not be perfect, it's better than not measuring at all, certainly. But I think I would totally agree with you. You need to be very careful about vanity measurement or sort of target madness, where you put the horse before the cart, and you end up doing crazy things to justify your measurement. But maybe Mohammed can say a word about that.
No, that's a great question, actually. So I think Google transitioned from a completely different way of thinking a few years ago to where we are today. So historically, like most tech companies or internet companies, we're thinking product first when talking to clients or stakeholders. So we'll tell you, look, YouTube is a great product, why don't you buy YouTube? Or why don't you buy mobile ads because this is the trend, and so on. We used to do this and we were guilty of this, okay? Same thing with our competitors like Facebook and so on, where how many likes do you have and how many followers and so on. I think we moved completely away from this in the past few years, where we're partnering much, much closely with clients, and we're also structuring our teams accordingly. So if you look at our teams here in the region, they're structured along industries. So we have a team that focuses on travel, a team that focuses on finance, on telcos, etc. And the way we engage with these clients is that we go first to listen. What are your problems? If your problem is to sell more tickets, we'll help you sell more tickets. If your problem is you want to gain more awareness for a new brand that you're launching, we'll help you get more awareness. If your issue is, in some cases, you want to sell more cars and you cannot sell online, so you want leads, you want just people to download your brochure, for example, we can help you that. So I think what the main answer to your question is that we're thinking of partners as clients now, and how can we help you rather than give you a menu of what we have and you choose what you want. Okay, and it's working, to be honest. You know, we're partnering very closely with most industries here in the region, but they tell us what they want.
And just to pick up your point about privacy, clearly there are two aspects of this. There are the products that we're building, and you know, we live in a data-driven world, so we've got a huge responsibility to make sure that data is responsibly handled. And then secondly, we've got the whole controversy of government surveillance and spying, which is a huge challenge to technology companies. I think it all comes down to the same simple point, that the only thing that we have is the trust of users. There's nothing to force users to come back to Google every day. And if they have doubts about the handling of that data, then the possibility is that they won't come back tomorrow. So that's a responsibility that we face every single day. And we bake in delivery of proper privacy controls to every product we develop. So whether that is some people speculate about companies that we acquire, like Nest or Waze and so on, and people say, well, look, you know, are there privacy concerns there? The simple point remains, we have to apply the same principles of responsible handling of data to all the projects that we work on.
One final question, gentleman there.
Thank you for the presentation. We noticed recently that Google acquired a few robotics companies, including Boston Dynamics. So if you can shed some light on Google plans in this area.
I wish I could, but I think it's early days, really. I mean, you'd obviously have seen the companies that we have acquired. I think you can speculate, and many people are speculating about where things are heading. I think that the speculation in terms of some of the things that I was showing you there around the Internet of Things, around machine learning, artificial intelligence, and so on. I can't be precise about where that's heading, but I think the same core runs through everything that we're doing, whether we're talking about search or driverless cars. We are trying to bring technology and information to bear to provide useful products for people that make their lives easier. And that thread runs through absolutely everything we do, and I'm sure will run into the future. Sorry?
Do we still have some time, or are we? Maybe a couple of questions. Sorry.
I'll have to go.
We have to go. Okay. I'm sorry. We have to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.